Okay. Chris, if you would begin then. You've got a nice big paragraph on the functions of the family, chapter 17. Historically,
in no.
This Chris.
Sorry. We've got lots of Chris's.
Historically and biblically, the family is the central institution in law and in society. Although we do not think of the family normally as a law-making body, the family is
nonetheless
the basic law-making body in all history. Every point of power and authority is also a point of law, and historically, family law has been the basic law of mankind. In any society or institution, there are basic rules of conduct, and these rules of conduct constitute its law structure. The family is man's basic law-making body because of a variety of reasons, but certainly one of the first of this is the fact that it is the first place man, as a child, encounters law, rules of conduct, and his idea of law is shaped and defined to a great degree by the family.
Okay, so there's the first key of the function of the family. It's the first place where the child learns about life, the family, where he grows up. He learns about rules and all these other things that we're going to study. So on one hand, we think of laws as originating from the government. The reality, laws start at the family level. Before the child learns about the existence of civil government, he learns about, oh, if you touch that, someone might leave some impressions on you. Or you learn from the family first. The outside world doesn't exist, really, to the child. Okay?
Life is seen through a law structure which the family gives to the child, and the law structure defines life for the child. But this is not all. The child's attitude towards every other institution and its laws is largely shaped by the family. How the child approaches and reacts to church, school, state, and society depends greatly on his source of law, parental authority. He can face these other law-making bodies rebelliously, or he can face them obediently.
Okay, you know what rebelliously means? You remember? Okay. Now, here's the thing, and this is a very foundational point to the whole argument for the need for having solid structure family. One of the reasons we think homosexual families are dangerous is because they don't teach the sense of authority structure. When you have a mother and father, you know, one's the head, one is to submit to the head. You learn submission to authority. That's something that's completely missing. And when an authority structure is missing, the whole society becomes anarchic. It becomes anarchy. Because there's no sense of order within the family. Now, if, for example, also the children here, the parents, are attacking the elders of the church, criticizing the elders or the pastor, if that's what they hear, guess what? That's the attitude they will have to authority in the church and otherwise, because they're thinking, yeah, the elders are head, but my parents don't think much about them. The children gather that, and they use that as the standard by which they live. And that's why it's foundational to teach a proper sense of authority within the family. Okay.
his attitude can be constructive, destructive, or indifferent, depending on his family background to a large degree. Every parent daily is a law-making person, a focal point of law enforcement, and the delinquency of parents in this respect is their delinquency before God, their Lord, and sovereign.
Yeah, delinquency is failing to do what you should. It's that's why I wrote the disobedience. It's failing to do what you should, a duty that you have. Okay? Any words there you don't know? Any questions on that so far? Okay. Max?
It's obvious, of course, that procreation birth is a function of the family, and in a healthy, biblical-oriented, and governed family system, this function is preceded by an important fact that conditions.
That sets up a condition for birth. It's knowing that the family was made for that. One of the functions of the family is to procreate. I just heard today that in Britain, the population of Britain is in decline. It's not even with the immigrants, the population of Britain is going down. Why? Because people are choosing fun instead of families. They're not having children. No procreating. Okay? Instead, they choose recreating. Actually, the word recreating used to be a good word, a positive word. Now, recreating just means sporting or relaxing, taking time. Recreating should probably be similar to procreating, but the fact is they have the functions all screwed up. Thankfully, we have a good example here that we don't teach fun at the expense of family. Okay?
The parents marry because there is a bond of faith and love between them, a resolution to maintain for life, a covenant under God.
Covenant there meaning an agreement, the husband and wife together under God.
As a result,
a heredity
of faith and a unity in terms of it established as a prior.
In terms of it is established.
In terms of it is established as a prior condition of birth.
Okay, just to pause there for a minute. Before you have children, there is that unity of faith that you have together, something that you can pass on to your children. That is what is called the prior condition of birth. Before the children are born, there are two people who love each other and who love God. So the child is going to receive the love from the parents and the knowledge of the love of God. Okay?
So that the child born into such a family has an inheritance which cannot be duplicated.
Right, they can't get it, it can't be repeated. Who can match that? The inheritance of godly parents, the inheritance of the knowledge of God and His love for us through Jesus Christ.
The biblical family cannot be
competed against.
Rivaled by man's science and imagination as the institution for the procreation and the rearing of children.
Right. Rivaled means, there it means it can't be compared to, because the Christian family is far superior to anything else. By the way, why is it that children try so hard when they are in the government's care to get away from there? How many children say, I don't want to be adopted by a family, I want to stay with the government because they're really good? Most children, if they hear a husband and wife, even if they're not even Christians, they don't know any better. Oh yeah, I want to go. I want to get out of the government. Why? Because government can't take care of children.
Yeah, I want to go to mommy and daddy, not to Mrs. or Miss.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very important to see that the family is the foundation of having children. Nothing else. And by the way, in homosexual marriages, they can't have children. So the very nature of it is limited. They can't do one of the foundational functions of the family. We say it this way. Normal, healthy people reproduce. In some cases where people can't. But normal people, when they grow up, it's just like a tree. A tree bears good fruit. It grows up, it's a good tree, it will bear good fruit. It's normal to do so. It is abnormal to say, I don't want any children. In part, people, there's that natural tendency. I mean, you look before a man and his wife get married, that they are so in love and they can't stay away from each other and they're always holding hands and all kind of thing. Then they get married and then what's the first thing they do? Or one of the first things, start thinking, well, we need to start thinking about children. And suddenly everything changes. All of that courtship and so on was working towards, hey, we're going to have a family. We're going to grow. We're going to be inconvenient and spend all our money on our children and barely survive so we can be a family. We'll have more children so we can spread the little money we have around. Why is that? Because that's a natural thing that's come from God. And we shouldn't minimize that. We should feel sorry for people who say, oh, me? I'm not interested in children. Because it's not normal. Okay, next.
Moreover, the family is man's first and basic school. Parents have very extensively educated the children before the child even sets foot inside a school. Moreover, every mother regularly performs the most difficult of all educational tasks, one which no school performs. The mother takes a small child, incapable of speaking or understanding a word of any language, and in a very short time teaches it the mother tongue. This is a difficult and painstaking task, but it comes simply and naturally in the family as an expression of the mother's love and the child's response to that love. At every stage of the child's life, the educational function of the home is the basic educational power in the life of a child. For education to cease to be parental control and become state control is deadly to both education and the child.
Yeah, the very foundation of schooling is within the family, and it's true. A child reflects more often the mother and then, to a lesser extent, the father very, very quickly. If they see the parents are concerned about something, they become concerned about it. If they think about, they see the parents switching off lights when they're not in the room, the children start to do the same thing. We took the kids out today for lunch for Joel's birthday, and Annabelle was sitting down there with the, what do you call that cookie thing that they give at a Chinese restaurant?
Fortune cookie.
Fortune cookie. And she's there looking at a thing and saying, Mom, how many calories is in this? Now, she wants to know about how many calories in the fortune cookie. I don't know what, because that's what the kids do. They're in the car and say, well, 2 grams of fat and there's so many calories. So she decides, I'm going to learn about, ask about calories too. How many calories in that? Why? Because there's a concern for some of those things. And it's natural that kids attach themselves to those things that they hear. They'll learn the bad things too, so that's why you have to be very careful. Okay? I told you, Joel, when I suddenly pressed my brake, and he said, that's, what did he say, it was a crazy lady driver? The immediate response, because why? He heard the bad things too. Somebody said that. Not saying any names or anything, but that's what he heard. And they pick up both. That's why you have to teach them the right things. But that's school. They don't learn that when they go to school. They learn those things already. You teach them to say please and thank you. You teach them about catechism. Why? Because that's the first school that the child faces. So there's another function of the family there. Okay?
The family is also the first government in the life of the child, with the father as the God-ordained head of the household, and his government under God as the child's basic governor. The children are not the only ones who are governed by the family. The parents are also. The mother is governed in her activities by the requirements of the husband and children. The father is governed by the necessities of providing for his family, protecting them, and giving them the example and leadership they need. Where the family is not self-supporting, there is neither power nor authority in the person of the father.
Okay, that's a good key there. The family is better be supporting itself. Otherwise, there comes question about the leadership of the family there. If someone else has to come and take care of the family.
Welfare families, from the days of the Roman Empire to the present, have been notorious for their undisciplined, immoral, and delinquent characters, and welfare families have always been marked by a general lack of masculine authority.
That means male authority, right? Men lead them.
A man who will not provide for his family, accumulate respect, and cherish private property will have neither the authority nor ability to govern with wisdom and honor. Lacking self-government, he cannot govern others. Welfare destroys family life and creates more evils than it tries to solve.
Okay, now this was written 40 years ago, before the welfare state was as big as it is today. And look at the people who are usually on welfare. There are women who have boyfriends, but no husbands. Or if they have a husband, he's in prison. Or he's just a lazy bum who does not take care or provide for his family. This is standard with those who are on welfare. The families are usually weak. And if you see this more in the big cities in the United States than you do see in Canada. But you often find when the leader or the father is not there, he's abandoned the family. It's no good. But here's the trouble. The government tends to support this, and that's why. So you need to look at each one of these functions and see how the government is working to undermine the family. If the woman marries someone, immediately the government of the United States cuts off the welfare. So there's no help for the family then. Oh, you have a husband. Now, if that man were just living with the woman in adultery, that's okay. They will keep giving them money then. But as soon as they get married, okay, you're married. It's done. That, now, I don't think any of the welfare was good in the first place. But the fact is, they penalize you for being married. In many countries, you're penalized in taxes if you're married. If you are single and you pay your tax individually, it's okay. But if you are married and you pay your taxes together, you're penalized for doing that. You have to pay more taxes. Which is, again, another thing that undermines the family. That's to do with the government. But the family, of course, is the one that teaches the foundation of government, of law and order, of functions of mother, of functions of father, functions of children. But they also get to see how someone will help, how a father will help his wife, how a mother will help her husband, and they will help each other in their duties. The lines are not drawn to the point where, oh, you may never cross over and help. Though the woman is manager of the house, it is not a sin for a husband to do the dishes or to help clean up or do some laundry sometime. Nathan's going to find out it's going to be a necessity to do that. And it's dangerous for us to think that, oh, these are all the, this is the line that has been drawn, and I may never go there, I may never go here. The idea is, it's control. There's nothing wrong in helping the other person in their duties. The danger is trying to take over control of that area. Okay? So it's okay. You can go home and cook for your wife, that's all right. Or a wife can help you do something, that's okay. You're not going to be sent to hell for doing that. In fact, she might be rewarded for helping you do some of those things. Okay.
Another basic function of the family is motivation and guidance. The child is provided with the best kind of guidance because the family is most interested in him, and the child is, in the Christian family, given the highest kind of motivation for his own future and present development.
Okay. Where else can there be motivation and guidance more than within the family? And who will do it better than you as a Christian? Now, if you're non-Christian, all bets are off. You can expect sometimes some decent parents and some not so good parents. But as a Christian, you learn, yeah, it's your duty to encourage, like God encourages us. So we encourage our children. So God guides us with his word, and so we guide our children with our words. That is something that is expected. It is in contrast to the Romans who thought, well, I don't want girl children, so let's let them die. These are children that could be 1, 2, 3 years old. They just left them to die. Usually under the big bridges of Rome. And that's how the Christian families became very, very large, because they took those girls in. Okay. Thanks.
The family also has a major economic function. The father provides for his family, not for strangers. Welfare agencies maintained by the state and federal agencies have provided some kind of economic existence for as many as 15 and more millions at one time. But daily, far more than 100 million persons are supported by the family system. Under statist welfare, there is a disintegration of the individual and the family, and extensive demoralization. Under the family system, untold millions are supported ably and well with the best of social consequences. Under welfare, education declines, there is less interest in the discipline and results of learning, and less ability to progress as a result. Under the family system, children are not only intellectually motivated for the best educational results, but they are economically financed through grade and high school, college, and sometimes graduate school, so that all the most ambitious educational enterprise of history is economically dependent on the family system. In terms of sheer economic efficiency, nothing in all history has ever equaled to the family. By comparison, statist welfare and communist takeovers of the family's economic functions are pathetic and tragic failures.
Okay, just a second there. Take note of the sentence before, two sentences before that. In terms of sheer economic efficiency, nothing in all of history has ever equaled the family. Let me give you an example of that, of economic efficiency. In the United States, where I know more about than Canada, the cost of educating a child is about, it takes about 40% of what the government spends for one child to put a child in a very good private school. 40% of what it costs the government to educate one child. And the standard, of course, in the U.S. government school is horrendous in the public schools compared to private schools in the U.S. Okay? There are always good schools in between, but generally, when you compare, 40%. Now, I'll give you another example. For people who get welfare, what's the cost of welfare? If they only printed the checks and sent them to the people, they would be able to give the people a little more than two times what they're giving them. So administering the welfare system is about 52% of the money. Just administration. Now, if a family did that, we'd be in big trouble. Those things are totally uneconomical. When the government is managing something, immediately the bureaucracy, the people in the offices, waste a whole lot of the money. But the family, they know immediately, no, we can't buy that, we can't afford that. Whereas the government say, let's buy it, our grandchildren will pay for it. I mean, look how much money is being spent every single year on paying debts. Debt for the country. There's no reason to go into most of those debts. But they plan, oh yeah, we're going into debt, but we're going to give this money away. All kinds of foolish things that are not necessary. If a family ran that way, the family would be bankrupt. They would lose their house, they would lose their car, and they'd be living in somebody's garage. There is a significant difference. We're asking for the family. And why? God made the family. That's why it's running that way. There's a proper understanding. There's one head and one assistant. There's a father, there's a mother. Whereas when you go with the government, you've got to go through this. You ever try to call the government office or something? Oh, it's not this department, it's this department. When you call it, oh no, it's back here. Oh no, it's back here.
It's not my job.
Try calling Revenue Canada. When you call here, oh no, it's okay, let's call it. No, not here. You have to call back here. Oh, let me put you through. Then the phone hangs up. If you run your house like that, you'd be broke. You'd have no money. Okay? So just from a practical point of view, economically, the family is necessary. And it's a basic function to teach good economics to your children. Our kids are coming today, we're talking about credit cards, and they see me using credit card, but they know credit card you pay at the end of the month. You pay your bills at the end of the month. Otherwise, if you don't have the money, don't spend it. If you can't pay it at the end of the month, don't spend the money. Okay. Next.
Socially, this magnificent economic institution of family has no equal in its contribution to social stability and order. To reduce the reason for marriage and the family to love is to deny the vast and varying social functions of the family. But in the biblical perspective, the family and marriage are governed not by love as the only sufficient reason for the social consequences, but by the covenant with God and the Word of God.
Mm-hmm. So while you have all these benefits of the family, let's remember, the family was made by God, and it's in covenant with God. That's the main function, that's the main reason for these things. It's not because, oh, we live together because it's economically better. No, we live together as husband and wife because that's what God commands. It is economically better. It is the best place to teach your children. It is the best place to teach your children about government. It's the best way to do all of these things. But that's not the motive, that's the result. The reason is God has commanded it. The results are, it's incredible. Okay, next.
The family as an economic unit has an excellent division of labor plan, whereby certain duties are required of the father, others of the mother, and still others of the children. There are mutual rights and duties, all of which are discharged with a greater degree of success and efficiency. Despite all problems than in any other institution.
Like you, in many places you see the government workers on the road, you've got three supervisors and one worker. You know, that kind of inefficient use of division of labor. A division of labor means everyone's got his has got his job. If you go in someone's house and say, who takes out the garbage? Somebody knows who does that job. Whose job is to check the window? Somebody knows, because there's a division of labor. And that's a very important thing to teach children from very young. My father was not very educated in terms of Christianity, but he had a good sense of what division of labor was. I took care of the garden, my brother took care of the chickens. My brother carried water, he had to fetch water. I checked the windows and the doors at night before we went to bed. I learned that in time I was maybe 8 or 9 years old. In my sleep, I'd go and check the windows to make sure everything was closed, because there you better leave your windows, make your windows proper locked, otherwise before you know it, your house is gone while you're sleeping. People will steal the panes of glass from your window if they could. These louvered windows, I don't know if you know, you can slip the glass up, pry it open, take the glass open, they'll take your glass and disappear with it. If they could. You have to make sure everything was locked properly. But that division of labor was very important to make things run smoothly. My sisters had their jobs. There's no question about confusing of labor. Of course, there were always additional things that popped up and you had to take care of. But those, it helps to have a good sense of the division of labor, okay?
The family, moreover, can withstand and survive more shock than any other institution. Economic disaster, personal disagreements, social catastrophe and the like.
Right. And social problems, big problems. A catastrophe is a big problem. You don't like the way, if you're in the government, you don't like how something's going, you just leave and go someplace else. In a family, you don't just pack up and say, well, I don't like the way you're dealing with me. I quit. You don't quit marriages.
Mm-hmm. There's like this one guy that's running for the Liberals. He was running for the PCs, then he found out the PCs were going to go against homosexuals, so then he joined the Liberals.
Yeah, well.
Now he's running for the Liberals.
Yeah.
Fighting from Nova Scotia.
Oh, right. Okay, next.
The family has also a valuable
policing
and the protective function.
Right, and policing means just the protecting. Like the police does, protects. So just make police into a verb.
The members of a family police one.
That's a verb, right?
They work to keep their members in line and out of trouble. The members of a family not only police and punish one another, but they also protect one another. And theirs is a cradle to grave protective function.
Cradle to the grave, you know what that is? From the beginning of your life, when you're in the cradle, to the time you die, you protect each other. Even when a child is gone from the home, he still works to protect his mother and father. Right? So cradle to the grave means beginning of your life to the end of your life.
When civil governments talk about cradle to grave security, they are simply imitating the family and offering the state as a substitute for the family. Throughout history and today, the family has provided the cradle to grave security for the overwhelming majority of all men and has done a most satisfactory job of it. The state has botched.
That means messed up.
Botched up with every attempt to replace the family. Today, the state has worked to limit the authority, power, and ability of the family, and then has turned to blame the family for conditions the state has created.
Okay, so in an attempt to replace the family, the state has messed things up. It has not done a good job as it thought. It started to tell the family, this is how you will raise your children, this is what you may say to them, this is how you may discipline them. And then you find out, oh, things have been messed up. And now they turn around and blame the family. Of course, the state never did anything wrong. In their mind, it's the family's fault. Right? I'll give you the example of if you have a child, if you discipline your child, the state puts you in prison. But if your child breaks somebody's window, you have to pay for it.
Yeah, the parent.
Yeah, the parent has to pay for it. So you can't discipline them, but you've got to take care of the troubles that they cause. That means the state then is against the family. It's trying to replace the family, but it's not successful. It can't be. Okay?
The state has extensively interfered in the family's functions and has claimed vast areas which properly belong to the family. Does this mean that the family has been weakened? Does the future pretend to decline in the importance of the family? On the contrary, the more the state has interfered, the more it has thereby underscored man's need for the family. The incompetence of the state as a family has made more obvious the competency of the family.
Competence
of the family as a family. The prevalence of sickness does not make health obsolete, but only all the more urgent needs and desires, needed and desired. Historically, every period of statism is followed by an era of intense family-oriented society as a man turns from sickness to health.
Okay. A couple of words there. Does the future portend a decline? That means, does the future suggest a decline in the importance of the family? The writer here is arguing that every time there is government control and trying to replace the family, there comes a time in history, almost like a cycle, when the family becomes strong again. It's not hopeless. This is not saying that this is the end of the family, as the governments are working to destroy family in Canada, United States, Europe. They have never been successful. The incompetence of the state as a family has been made more obvious. The competence of the family as a family. The prevalence of sickness does not make health obsolete. Not because sickness is all around, it means that there's no use to try to be healthy. We still have to try to be healthy. We still have to work. Maybe we have to work harder. But we do need to work more. Okay, last one.
We are today in an era of burgeoning statism.
Yeah, good. Well, burgeoning. You look at the word and think, what does that word mean? It means increasing statism, increasing government control.
On every side, the family is under attack. And the state is assuming progressively more and more of the family's functions, and progressively finding itself more and more prone to social disintegration.
It means falling apart.
And then demoralization. More than ever before, the biblical faith and law concerning the family, its functions, property, and faith must be stressed and taught. The future does not belong to disease. It belongs to health. Because this is God's world. It is God's order which shall prevail. Except the Lord build the house. they labor in vain and that do it.
Okay. Okay, summary then. Historically and biblically, the family has always been the center of society. Without the family, a society quickly falls apart. You've seen what happened in Russia. What's happening in North America? How the family is beginning to fall apart in many, many areas. There are things called today blended families. Everything is considered a family these days. But the Bible teaches us about the family, that there's a father and a mother, children, and sometimes extended family, grandparents, so who might live with you. But that's a real family. And family has always been the center of society. The main functions of family are, among other things, procreation. That means having children. But in China, your government says you may not. In Canada, you have the freedom to, but people don't want to do it. Partly because of they have their own...
Jones factor.
Pardon?
The Jones factor.
Yeah, well, there's always the competition. There's always the desire to... for fun rather than having children. But the function of family, second, is also man's first school. Nothing can compare to this school. You learn so much more, and you learn with teachers who love and care for you. Three, the family is the first government for a child, where you learn order and authority and respect for authority and proper use of your authority. That you can't buy with money. You have to see that. D, the function of family is for motivation and guidance, encouraging the children. The people who truly love them will motivate them to do what is right and good. The function of family is economic function. It's the first economy of the child. The child learns, well, if my mother and father spend all the money one day, the next day we don't have anything to eat. And maybe that's how I have to live. You spend when you have it. But if you are careful and you spend wisely and they see, well, no, we're not going to do that. That's not a good use for money. Then they learn to be more careful. The family is where a child learns about division of labor. That's an important thing for children. You know what is very sad is that there are all of these foolish child labor laws that are intended to undermine the family. There are sometimes when the parents are poor and the child needs to work. There's nothing wrong in a child working. In fact, there's something wrong if the child doesn't work. Now, maybe the child doesn't have to work out of the home, but that child better be working in the home. And it's a sign of weakness, and it's an attempt to destroy the family when parents don't make their children work. And people hear you say that, and what do you mean? I'm trying to make life better for my children. Give them work to do. The need to learn to work, the need to learn that there are divisions of labor. There's some things that you're expected to do. And, of course, the family is the first means of policing and protecting of the family. They learn to protect and watch out for each other. What better place to see? And for people who really care about you, look what she's doing. She's playing with a knife. Well, that's a policing function, and that's a good thing. Where you're able to do so. Now, the civil government has extensively interfered with the family's function and is claiming more rights to interfere. The right to come into your house anytime. And they've made up all of these rights and they want to take more rights away. But the state is incompetent in these areas and has weakened the family. The state is not better. The reason fast state shouldn't interfere, not only because God says so, but because they can't do it. They just can't do it. And that's why God said that they're not to do it, because they don't have the ability to be parents. They don't have the ability to be mother or father, brother or sister. They can't do it. Only the power of God can strengthen the weakened family today. And that is why we need to call upon God. We need to pray. We need to work in our own situations. pray and work, work and pray, that our families can be strong again. Our families can understand these functions. We can teach these to our children. This is a very positive lesson in fixing the problems. There's work to do, and may God help us to do it. Any questions on this?